has been strangely lost in the struggle. God represents a parent, and a parental principle. Humanity is one family. One family, a brotherhood and a sisterhood of all that lives. We are all intimately related if we can trust the Adam story. If we can't, we are still intimately related by the fact of proximities. We are here, and we're here to work with each other for the common good. Instead of that, we try to work the common good through so that it serves each of us according to our own desires. Now, I think in the study of philosophy and so on that we've been working with for many years, that many people have made great advancement in this situation. They realize more and more of what is happening, and they're trying their best to do something about it. There is a great consolation for them also, namely that those who have grown, who have gradually conquered their own negative attitudes, who have made a real, honest, earnest effort to be good citizens and good human beings, are not forgotten. Because, after all, the final judgment isn't here. The final judgment is the study of our own moral structure by powers that have the capacity to do it well. Actually, one of the first consequences that results from improvement is a change in the magnetic field of the human being. As we see some rather peculiar-looking characters wandering around who seemingly come out from some other place, we don't know where, we might also realize that the magnetic fields of such persons are as disjointed as their forms and bodies. The invisible furry dressing with which we are born takes on strange looks also when we become strange people. And all the way through the line, the values that we have start paying off the moment we have them. Now, we may not notice that a control of temper has any great effect on our outer lives, but you should see the magnetic field. You should see what happens whenever virtue or integrity or honor or self-sacrifice arise in the metaphysical structure of the human being. There is immediate evidence of a grace, of a new realization of kindness and friendship. Magnetic field is the basis of all physical function. Therefore, from the improvement of this field, from a cloudy, swirling mass of disorder into a gentle, quiet, luminous raiment of peace and enlightenment, the body begins to change its habits. First thing you know, the blood cells take on some of this. Little by little, every part of the body rises to meet the progress in integrity and improvement that we achieve within ourselves. Nothing is lost that is good. Nothing can be kept that is bad. Actually, therefore, we can see the integrity is beginning to pay off inside. Well, inside is more important than most people realize. We've been spending too much attention on the outside. But it's on the inside that health, happiness, integrity, life, truth, realities, love, all these things are inside things. As they increase, the outside begins to reflect these increases. The individual looks better, feels better, is better, has a new inward chemistry, is no longer subject to numerous infirmities which are due to stress and emotional tirades of one kind or another. Everything works better when integrities begin to develop within the person. And as they develop within the person, they also move out into the larger environment. The great changes we hope for must come from human beings who become aware of value. And when they become aware of value, they will also become aware of how to use it. And they will not start doing things that will make everything worse than it was before. For the time comes for us to realize that the, let's say that the great unpardonable sin, when you get down to the whole root of it, is stupidity. And that is comparatively incurable. You can't just toss it off. You have to wear it out. stupidity must be transformed. Education must teach us to overcome the weaknesses in ourselves and not constantly burden us with the weaknesses of other people or other countries. Stupidity is the individual feeling, is for some reason or other, that he's better than somebody else, but not proving it, because he has nothing to prove it with. Stupidity is the acceptance of false values. It is the idea of happiness built on intemperance. It is all kinds of mistakes. Now, some of these mistakes are comparatively slight. The individual will recover. But some of these mistakes can lead to long-set and deeply and rooted mistakes that can cut through civilization and damage many generations. The health of the people today is perhaps as poor as it has been in a long time. A few people are apparently doing well, but the rich are the victims of the doctors, and the poor are victims of something else. Everything is not what it should be. There should be some measure of integrity. Now, you can lose everything, and you can still be a person of value if your own integrity is there. Then after the war with Japan, it was reported that the emperor, who had tried in every way he could to prevent it, but could not. They say that in Japan, an individual who loses face loses everything. And they also said the Emperor Hirohito lost everything, but he never lost face. And now this is what we have to think about maybe here. We must keep the integrities which are more valuable than anything we can own, possess, or hope for. We have to become aware that if we lose face, we lose all. And we lose face the moment we compromise principles. When we sell out integrity, our dignity is gone. Now, we are trying to think in terms of doing something about these things. And groups are springing up in many areas, working sincerely to find answers to some of these problems. I think the first thing that all of these individuals will have to do is to understand correctly their own motives. Now, many of them are doubtlessly very sincere and will gain and will give to important ways. But there are also a number of them who are interested from a sensational standpoint, who are interested in being part of something that seems to be going somewhere, and at the same time have made no improvement in personal character. They still have the same old mistakes. They're still the kind of persons who will drink a deep toast to temperance. All these things leave us without the strength we need. If people really believe that we are in trouble, and we are, then it is up to these people to make sure that in no way they are contributing to that trouble. If they can't do anything about it, they can at least not contribute to it. They cannot do the things which are not right. And if you want to know what those things are, Ten Commandments make a pretty good picture. We have to keep these rules. It's only when we are right that natural and universal integrity can support us. All through the time, where great teachers have come to the world to strengthen the integrities of human beings. Their doctrines have had great influence over long centuries and ages. But gradually, these doctrines have fallen into the keeping of persons who were not really dedicated. They have fallen into channels where they have become exploited and misused. So the whole problem of getting this thing back on its feet is to start with the individual himself. He has no right to blame others if he has not corrected something in himself. So we have certain simple things we can all do that will help a great deal. One is to recognize growth in occurrences as they come about. When we are caught short on something, the phone doesn't ring when it should, there's a tendency to be irritated. There has to be a power within ourselves that can control that irritation and prevent it from arising. Friends are not always kind. We have to face this, and face it without contributing in any way to negative attitudes. Some problems are relational, some political, some social, but in all cases, a problem is a challenge. A problem is a demand for a higher level of attitude on something that is occurring. And little by little, if we gradually use the universe as our basic text, we're going to get along much better than we do now. We have about 10,000 years of civilization that we can use in trying to decide what is right. We are going to learn how various attitudes had their inevitable consequences. Lycurgus, the tyrant of one of the little Greek states, Sparta, was not really a ruler at all. He was a kind of a substitute or an advisor or something. But he took the state of Sparta, which was falling apart, and he made it become what is a word for the greatest self-control that the human being can have, the Spartan attitude. So Lycurgus said, here we have a country in trouble, not much money, nobody doing anything very well. So he made a series of laws. He said the first thing you're going to have to do is work. You're going to have to work whether you want to or not. And you're going to have to work whether you're rich or poor. And the fact you're rich cannot excuse you from cooperation in daily labor. The second thing he said when he went in to get hold of it is that nobody should cultivate luxury. Luxury is indolence. Indolence inspires dishonesty. And indolence destroys initiatives and keeps the individual from being what he should be. So there's going to be no false luxuries, no privileges to classes, no recognition of aristocracies, no one too good to work, no one too lazy to work, and the community is going to become a well-organized structure with a job for everyone and everyone in the job. He made this stake and transformed Sparta into a great power, not because it had to be a military power, but simply because it had to be a power of disciplined people, all of whom cared enough for their country to take care of it. This Spartan example would be quite useful here in our present environment, because how many people really think enough of their country to take care of it? One thing is to use it, some to abuse it, some to enjoy it, but who to take care of it? We elect people to take care of it, and then we have to elect to take care of the people we elect. But every individual on low or high point has a responsibility to use the knowledge that he possesses. When we have a new invention, there should be a dedication with it that will only be used wisely. When we develop a new science, that science should be adapted to the common good without a major expectation of exploitation. We should not be in business for profit, but in business for conviction and purpose and for cooperation for the common good. So looking over the sins that they didn't really diagnose in the scriptures, they say they're there, but they don't well know what they are. This one that is the one that cannot be forgiven is the misuse of the assets bestowed upon us by the divine principle. We are given everything we need, everything necessary. To use it wisely is virtue. To abuse it is sin. And unless we are able to make this clear decision and do something about it in its own way, there doesn't seem to be very much chance for the good times we really look for. There is, however, a very optimistic note in all this, and that note is that it's becoming uncomfortable. The situation as it is isn't comfortable. And if there's another thing human beings love, it's comfort. We do not want to be worried all the time. We do not want to find it impossible to find work. We do not want to hear constantly the complaints of crime and sin. We want to be a people that are working, busy, up and doing, friendly, kindly, and cooperative. But we are doing everything in daily living to make this impossible. So we have to begin to think how to do some of these things better. Actually, the first line of defense in this matter really is young people. Our young people are the beginning of a system. Our young people are the ones that must begin to understand the facts of life. Even as low as the grade schools, there should be emphasis upon integrities. We should learn from childhood the privileges of living in a good country, and we should be willing to recognize our part of the need of defending, supporting, and expanding the concepts upon which our nation has been founded. We need, definitely, to start young people off with gratitude rather than inordinate ambitions. We should not be teaching everybody how to become rich or how they think they could get richer. We should begin to teach some of them how to be right in their living, their thinking, their home life, and all these things. Young people should be taught that life is an opportunity and a responsibility, but it is not a free ride. It is not something that you don't have to do anything for but enjoy. Also, as we go on with this, we find other factors coming in by which we can take young people and give them the integrities which they need to know. The textbooks for the American public school system need considerable revision. We need to get rid of a lot of things that we have considered to be the very backbone of a competitive system. And the competition is gone. The markets are going fast. We are becoming one world, all in trouble together. And this the young people should know. They should realize that each individual, in one way or another, is either going to add something to the good or subtract something from it. The young people have no real idea of what education is. What is education? Is it becoming smart? No, it's becoming good. Education is that which lifts an individual from the uncertainties of infancy towards the certainties of maturity. And these certainties are all good. Education is not just reading from a book. Education is an experience of appreciating the values of the life which we live and the environment in which we live it. Education is really a value for sharing. Every educated person should teach too. Everything that we do should be done by example and by cooperation and by principle. There is no reason why we can't gradually begin a new generation of young people. Young people are not as yet completely enmeshed in the hopelessness of things. A lot of the rowdyism, a lot of the delinquencies we talk about are despair. They're young people with no future, no hope, no protection, and no values. This we call a country of civilized people. The world is in the same spot. A few countries are trying desperately to bring a better concept. But right here, we are the leading powers of the earth. And we should be setting the highest possible example to all other peoples, that our young people are growing up to be constructive, valuable citizens, that they're not here for a ride. They're here for a purpose. And that purpose must tie in some way with spiritual values. There's no use looking around us into the general fields of things to find defense or support for our principles. The support has to come from above. The support has to come from a standard of life superior to that of the human being. The only support we have is a universe that says we're doing it right. And when the universal principles were operating through us say, well done, good and faithful servant, something has been accomplished. We cannot expect to be appreciated by others, but we shall be acceptable in the sight of the Lord if we get out and do the work. So we have this type of problem. Now, older people can certainly get into it also to any degree they want, but they must do it by trying to make some definite, constructive effort to do something for others rather than forever themselves. After all, there is nothing that has proven itself to be more transitory and more impermanent and a greater cause of contention and distress than wealth. Wealth has always been something that has divided human beings. It is also something that has, in most cases, ended in tragedy for the person who possesses more than they need. The history of wealth is a very sad one. And it's perfectly all right to assume that we should have what we need and what we think we should have. But the tremendous problem of this great structure of finance ending in the grave for every single person, that we take nothing with us from this hoard we have put together. We take nothing with us from the tremendous incomes that we have created. And we very seldom leave much that does any good. When we give this wealth to those who follow after us, they become as unhappy as we are. And the burden of wealth is to pass from one generation to another the most serious and terrible weight that the human soul must bear. There is no need for these things. The very simple problem, again in the scriptures, store up your wealth in heaven. Well, heaven in this case meaning in inner virtues. Become wealthy in friendship and in peace and in understanding. Be wealthy in sympathy and learn arts and philosophies and various forms that make life richer and all that type of thing. There is no need to build a reputation on scandal or all these things which are now so popular. But actually, I think we're seeing the evidence of a kind of desperation. It looks to me very much as though it's becoming more and more evident that we're going to have to do it right whether we like it or not. And this is almost more than we can bear. We just can hardly stand the thought that we can't make the good old familiar mistakes. Well, those mistakes are not as pleasant as we have often thought they were. No mistake is really pleasant. It's usually an evasion of responsibility. But there is a great need and a great light shining out. And I think that the scriptural writings incline to the idea that the sin that cannot be forgiven is a kind of a combination term. It is harder to forgive something when you know that you're wrong. If an individual doesn't know he's wrong, you can forgive him. But when he does exactly what he knows he shouldn't do, that in itself becomes more or less unforgivable. We can't do that even though we forgive 70 and 7 times. It's going to run out in the end. We also have a great problem here in trying to add something to the life values of the underprivileged. Something has to be done to make things a little more equitable, a little more reasonable. There should not be these sharp lines of demarcation with half the world hungry. All these things are problems that involve a planet and its entire population. And this planet with entire population is growing in population every year and at the same time carefully wiping out many forms of self-employment. We are employing less and less on account of profit. Well, this is not going to go on forever. It can't. Because if it ends up, we have to have what is one of the most terrible and tragic events of all, and that is finally a revolution of some kind. We don't know that. We don't need it. We don't want it. But we're going to have to begin to pick some public servants who begin to see things in their proper light. And in the religious work, there's a new group of people coming up, a group of people that are trying very hard to do things better than they've ever been done before, and they are going to do it. But with all their efforts to do the thing, there is a great need for a dedication to the divine purpose of life. We should be doing these things not because we want to be happier, but because we want to be better. We should do these things not because we get recognition for doing them, but because they are valuable and necessary things, even if they are only criticized. We should not allow the social side of religious or philosophical organization to conceal the need for the good hard work that must be accomplished to get us out of the present doldrum. Everyone, therefore, who is dedicated to a principle, a desire to do something better, should also make an offering. In the ancient times, they used to bring offerings to the altars of their gods. And we don't do that very much except through the collection plate. But at the same time, the old concept lingers on. We all make an offering to our gods. So if we are going to be religious people in orthodox or unorthodox lines, along mystical or philosophical, transcendentalist lines, let's bring an offering. When we join an organization or side with it, let's bring to the altar of that organization a corrected error, something we are going to do right from now on in our own lives. Let us bring a reform within ourselves, which has become important. Let us say this: from this moment on, my gift to God is that I will not be jealous of anyone. This is a way to, you know, get some vitality behind it, and that the individual gives something that he shouldn't be doing, gives it away entirely and ceases doing it in the name of the thing he wants to do, which is better, nobler, and more realistic. So if you have a nasty situation of some kind and you go into religion, bring that situation to the head. Finish it. And do everything possible to finish it constructively. If you can't do it that way, at least carry no note of anxiety or dislike or anything in your heart. Do everything you can possibly do. If you have been, if you've spoiled a child, take the obligation to assert discipline as part of what is necessary. If you have vanities of your own that other people don't know about, choose something that is significant and say, I bring this to the altar of truth. I'm giving away something I don't want anyway, but don't know that I don't want it. I'm giving away something that has made me sick and miserable for years, but I've nursed it as I would nurse a weak baby. Do these things. Bring to the organizations which you form a definite act of personal dedication, a dedication that is far greater than any other gift you can give. Trying to use truth to grow, which is its proper purpose. Using new ideas to strengthen principles and to carefully avoid all types of bargaining and compromising that may have affected you in the past. I know people have a terrible time when they get a phone call and they're busy. They don't want the phone call while they're out watering the lawn or something of that nature. So they get nervous and they come in and they kind of complain and they're short. Come in quietly. There are no interruptions in a well-ordered life. You flow from one thing to another. And if the things you are doing are for the good of the world, you will always have the chance to do it. And as you go on through life and come finally to the time of the mystery, might say, when you have to be told or taught or realized whether or not you're going to be forgiven, if you're at the edge of this life and have to go over into the next one, every kind deed is there to vouch for you. Everything that you have done to improve your own inner life makes a shining star for you. And in the great universe of things, these deeper, invisible values are the most important. And if you are really trying, nature will protect you forever. Nature doesn't ask you to start in immediately and be successful. The divine plan is eternal. You're in it for all eternity. You must go through it forever, on and on and on. But not because it is always going to be a nuisance to you. Because the moment you understand it, you have a magnificent transmutation. The alchemy of transforming the daily burden to the daily privilege. The transformation of the individual who is using his will to accomplish his own purposes, dedicating that will to the accomplishment of the divine purpose. All the way along, the alchemy of transformation means that for every physical thing you do better, there is a change in your psychic chemistry. There is some growth or influence showing. And when the time comes, when you have to face up to it all, you will find that your star will shine so brightly you don't have to defend yourself. It's not even that you're successful. Just a good try is a little spark when you need it. And in our daily lives today, we are all impermanent, but we are part of something that is going to go on, and we're going to go on with it. We're going to go on through time and space. And in all these different times and spaces, we're going to have beautiful experiences, wonderful adventures, incredible opportunities to come closer and closer to that infinite benevolence, which is the principle of universal love for all that lives. These things are within our reach, but we have to kind of get hold of some of the shortcomings. And in the last few years, this old world we're in now has had a lot of shortcomings. And we've had two desperate wars in this century. We have not learned a thing from them. We haven't realized what the values are. And the only way we're going to get that realization is when each person realizes it in his own heart and simply refuses to be part of destruction. So we have a great inducement now. We have an inducement financially. We have an inducement personally, emotionally, educationally, politically, industrially, financially, and morally. We are on the stand on the edge of something. We must make decisions, and the right decisions will carry us victoriously into the next century. There is an ancient prophecy relating to this. Nostradamus was one of those who prophesied. He said after the end of the 20th century, there would come the Paraclete. The Paraclete is the Prince of Peace. And from the end of that time, from the end of the present century, for a long period to come, the world will be at peace. And people will grow and love and serve and work together. But this is the time of more or less death hour, the dark hour, the hour of unknowing through which we must pass from the night of our own pressures to the daylight of a golden age. For the golden age is really the age in which the soul shines over all the rest of life. So we have to kind of work it out the best we can. But I think if we have to sum it up, that the unforgivable sin is uncontrollable personal ambition, willing to sacrifice all to personal aggrandizement. While this continues, there can never be real peace. But in the old philosophies, those who do this, those who give everything else simply for material wealth, are probably going to have a very different kind of embodiment next time, in which the sins of this time will become more evident to them. There is no need, however, for anyone to go out of this life better than they came into it. One little resolution, one little effort, one little good deed has its little shining star, and we are sure short of stars. So we'd better get to work them and build them just as fast as we can. Well, thank you very much.